It's 4 o'clock on a Monday. You know what that means, don't you? It's time for another exciting episode of Taxi TV Live.
Yeah, baby.
Woohoo. Once again, I have back as my very special guest, Mr. Bobby Borg. Yeah.
Everybody.
We did one of these pre-recorded shows a few days ago, and it went so well. And the whole time I'm thinking, man, I got to talk to him about marketing, because Bobby has, in fact, written a book about marketing, which is right there, Music Marketing for the DIY Musician. And I thought, you know what? We can have him come back and do another one. So here we are, and I'm very excited. So Bobby is a professor at USC. He has authored several books, I think somewhere around a half a dozen books. Some of them, multiple editions have come out. He's been a touring musician. He was the drummer in the band Warrant. He's taught at Musicians Institute at UCLA, at USC. And he knows so much about a lot of stuff. And he's got a master's in marketing communications. And so that's why I wanted to bring him back to talk about marketing stuff. So welcome, and I'm going to pop up that thing you sent me so people can see that. It's going to cover both of us if you want to give a brief overview about what you're going to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for having me, everybody. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about the complete marketing process. As you can see here, there is a graphic that shows you what that process is. Typically speaking, when you ask people what marketing is, they think it's promotion. And when they think of promotion, they think of three things: Spotify playlists, Instagram, and TikTok. But you could see marketing is so much more. It's a complete process that starts with research, which is made up of everything from a vision, SWOT, customers, competition, and testing, to goal setting, to strategizing, which is creating strategies to achieve your goals, which is everything from company branding, product price, place, promotion, and measuring. And then you can see how many elements of promotion there are. Then, of course, you have to assemble your plan, execute your plan, and then approve upon your plan. So we're going to give you like an entire overview of all of this stuff, and I'm going to keep it brief. It looks like a lot of stuff, but I mean, literally, I could do this in either 2 minutes or like, you know, 3 hours. So, or 12 weeks. So.
All right. Well, let's do the 90-minute version. And, you know, one thing I want to say, though, before you get going is musicians, creative people in general, just not musicians, but people who are artistic, love doing their art, and they want to share their art with the world, and they are embarrassed and fearful of marketing or selling because they worry that people will be offended by them if they try to sell them. Where I look at this as, you've got something amazing, and if you believe that your stuff is amazing, other people will probably find it amazing, and you're actually doing them a favor by turning them onto something that they may love as well. But you can't just, hope is not a strategy. Bobby and I both have said that a million times in our careers. And you have to have a tool set and a framework and some knowledge to get the word out. So that's what Bobby's going to do for you right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's right. You know, I come from a family of artists and business people. And my father was an expert artist, but also an expert business person. And, so to me, this is kind of in my blood. And, you know, it's like, if you have something of value and something that's going to make somebody's life better, why not tell them about it? Why be, you know, inhibited or embarrassed by doing that? There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. So absolutely. So let's start with this. Ready? We'll go ahead and do the whole marketing process.
Go for it.
Okay. So you know what's interesting, you guys? You know, a lot of times people have a wrong idea about marketing. So real quick, what is marketing? Let's define it. Marketing is the process of creating products and services to satisfy a target audience, increase awareness, and make sales. So let's talk about that. Marketing is a process. As I just showed you, it's a complete process that starts everywhere from vision to execution of creating products and services. Yes, your product or your music and your live performances and your t-shirts, that is a product. Whether or not you like to think of it as a product or not, you know, a lot of people get really sensitive about this and they go, oh, it's my art. But if you're a hobbyist and you just want to sit in your backyard, you know, in your tool shed and make art that nobody ever hears, you know, or you just close friends here, that's fine. But I'm talking right now to people that actually want to quit their day jobs, that want to, you know, prosper in music. and they are okay with the concept of art and commerce merging together. That's who I'm talking to right now, not the artistes that just want to, like, you know, sit in their backyard and, like, you know, and write and stuff like that and not care if anyone ever hears it. That's not my audience right now, right? So marketing is the process of creating products and services to satisfy a target audience. So you want to have a target audience in mind. If you're an artist or band, then your target audience is your fans. If you are writing music for music placements and film and television, then you might think of your target audience as the type of people that are going to license the music from you. So that could be certain music libraries. It could be actually certain film companies. It could be certain directors. It can be certain styles of movies or films or television shows or something. So you're writing for, you know, that would be your ultimate target customer, let's just say, for example. So marketing is the process of creating products and services to satisfy a target audience. Increase awareness. We want people to know about us, right? Now, this is what Michael opened with. But we need to make sales. Because if you just have a lot of people that know about you, but then they never do anything, it's absolutely worthless. So we need to get them to act by having calls to actions and things of that in our marketing. So that's the definition of marketing. Now let's look at the process. You know, Michael, it's really funny because I personally, like you, and we've talked about this, I spend money to, like, see what other people are doing. I always buy books, read them, you know, I go to seminars, even seminars that I don't need to go to, I go to anyway to see what people are saying. And, you know, recently I went to Tony Robbins, seminar, spent a lot of money to go to his seminar because I'd been hearing him for about 45 years. And I figured, you know, he's got to be doing something right. So I was expecting, like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And the guy comes out and it's a trip, man. I mean, this guy definitely has the energy. He's got the presence and stuff. And he comes out, everyone's clapping and, like, jumping up and down. And he comes on, he's got the headphones on and he goes, you know what? You know, I am going to give you the keys to success. And it starts with a vision. You have to have a vision. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, I mean, of course, that's important. But it's just like, I thought you were going to give everyone the 1-800 number to success, right? You call this, under, you know, it's just like no kidding. Like, in other words, you know,
stating the obvious.
And sometimes, you know, it made me realize, to me and you, it's the obvious to, you know, but there's a lot of people that just don't have a sort of a business sense, you know, and it reminds me that, you know, look, you guys, there is no secret to success, really. I mean, when you really kind of boil it down, it's not that complicated. What typically is complicated is people's power to execute it. There's just so many people that don't execute, right? So anyway, so the things I'm about to tell you today are really not rocket science. They're pretty straightforward. So you have to have a vision. Simply put, so that we can get through this in 90 minutes, a vision is understanding where you want to go. It's the bigger picture kind of thing, right? Because when you know where you want to go, it's easier to map out the directions to get there. That it's that simple. If you were going to call an Uber, what's the first thing that it asks? Where are you going? If you don't know, it doesn't come and pick you up. If you're driving down the street and you stop on the side of the road and you go, excuse me, can you give me directions? And they go, where are you going? You go, I don't know. Well, you're not going to get very far. Right. So you
and then people will blame the Uber driver, even though they didn't know where they wanted to go. So don't be that person.
Exactly. That's true. Right. If you don't know where you want to go, no one else is. So nice, Michael.
Don't clown around.
That's right. I like that. That's good. It's good prop. But, you know, simply you have to know where you want to go. Now, sometimes I have students and clients that don't know where they want to go. And that's why you go to school. That's why you experiment with things to kind of try to figure it out. I personally, I don't know where I got it. It came down from the heavens and smacked me on the head. But at the age of 10, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. And I can even pump out like a little vision paragraph for you and tell you even the exact record label I wanted to be signed with.
Wow.
And interestingly enough, 10 years later, I was signed to that label. Now, I'm not going to break out the yoga mat and start chanting or anything. But sometimes when you hold a vision in your head and it just keeps on playing like a movie, those things come to fruition.
So, I've got to tell you something. Sorry to interrupt your flow, but
please. I saw
the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show when I was 9 years old and looked at my parents and said, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I want to make records. I didn't want to be a Beatle. I wanted to be the guy that said, change the harmony part to this. At 9 years old, I knew that. At 17 years old, I went to a party in a basement after prom, and it was a makeout party for a bunch of 17-year-olds, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song, Our House, was playing on the stereo. The record had just come out, and I looked at my girlfriend and said, what I wouldn't give to work with that band. 2 years later, I was working with that band. So right there with you, buddy. I get it.
That is so amazing. That is so cool, you guys. I mean, that's what you need. You need to have a clear idea about
vision.
Absolutely, vision. Okay, then once you have a vision, let's move on to something called a SWOT analysis. This is a tool that's been used for decades, you guys, and is still used today. So a SWOT analysis stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. But what I'm going to do is convert it to what's called an OSWT analysis. So I'm going to start with the opportunity, then look at the strengths, weaknesses, and threats. Okay. So now that you have this vision, you need to look outside into the industry and just examine, does it represent a profitable marketing opportunity? So in other words, typically you want to ask yourself, does my vision like fill any kind of need or solve any kind of problem? Because I mean, taxi is a perfect example. I mean, essentially Michael found a problem, right? He had a kind of a vision. I want to start my own business. I want to, you know, maybe work with artists. And then that vision represented an opportunity because at the time there was a big need for young artists to find a taxi ride to success, right? Find a vehicle in which they can get their music to bigger companies, but bigger companies don't take unsolicited material. So he's the middle person, a perfect solution to a problem that filled a need, right? So you have to ask yourself, does my idea fill a need or solve any kind of problem? Now, the first thing some of you guys might be saying is wow, does music fill a need? Like what? I don't get it. And I go, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, right? Does your music fill any kind of need? And you're going to go, well, of course, you know, music, you know, we run to it, we dance to it, we, you know, get the married to it, get divorced to it, you know, et cetera, you know, but no, I'm going to say, but how is it different, unique, and interesting? That's really what people need. People get bored. They want something new. They want something fresh. So is what you're doing new, fresh, interesting, or is how you deliver that to music supervisors or film directors or whomever, song pluggers, are you doing it in a way that's maybe different or solving some problem from like all the other people trying to break in? Maybe it's the type of service you do, how fast you get it to people, how quick you can turn things around. Maybe your personality, maybe the way you brand yourself that gives you a little bit of a different position and competitive advantage in the marketplace. So you kind of have to think about this stuff, okay? And you know, on that note too, if I might real quick, some of the books that I wrote, you know, back in the 90s, there was no Berklee College of Music, music business department. You know, people didn't know about music business, you know? And I said, wow, it's crazy how there's not a book for musicians by a musician that kind of like, you know, helps people, you know, break into the industry. And I wrote that book, you know, and from then that created a whole series of other books as well. You know, so I kind of created this little niche for myself based on a need, you know, so kind of just think about that, you know. All right, then moving on, do you have the strengths? So OSWT analysis, do you have the strengths to go after that opportunity? Now, a lot of times musicians, we live in a fairy tale, like we live in denial, and sometimes living in denial is good, but also it could be bad because, hey, do you have the skills to write? How much time did you put into your songwriting? You know, can you really sing your demos or should you be hiring people? You have to think about really objectively, do I have the strengths to go after my opportunities? If you don't, then you're going to have weaknesses, right? It's usually the opposite of strengths. Find a way of how to overcome those weaknesses and turn them into strengths. Hiring, let's just say, for example, singers to sing your demos, or maybe learning how to record a little bit better, or maybe taking songwriting classes. And then, of course, threats are competition. They're things like, things in the environment that we can't control. Sometimes they call threats a pest analysis, political, economic, socioeconomic, you know, technology. These are all threats. So right now, a couple big threats coming in are AI. So I would definitely look out into the external environment and ask yourself, what's going to happen in the future? You know, how things are going to change? How can I adapt? How can I take advantage of it? Don't just sit back and just kind of wait for things to happen. So that's called the OSWT analysis. Okay. Once you have that, let's move on to customers. So now you kind of have to understand who your customers are, right? So now we're still in research and now we're on customers. So customers are basically just asking yourself, who is my most likely audience? So if I'm in a band or I'm an artist, who is most likely going to consume my products and services, right? Because you don't know exactly always who your fans are until they actually become fans, right? But you have to ask yourself who is most likely, so that you, as sort of independent or DIY musicians and songwriters, can use your resources in a way that's most effective. You don't want to just kind of, I mean, listen, if you guys ever try to run Google ads, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't just go, you know, you can't just take
Google
money and
would
go,
love it if you did, but
yeah, exactly. But you've got to go like this.
Hey, there's a reason that there are urban radio stations and there are country radio stations and
exactly.
There are yacht rock, soft rock radio stations. Each of them goes after a market segment.
Exactly. Yep. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. So you guys have to understand who it is, because then you can narrow down your marketing and you can get more focused on the people that really care, you know, and then there's remarketing and things like that. So then you just market on the people that responded, and then you just keep on going and going till your ad is hitting everybody that wants to see it, right? Not just blanketing it and hoping that a couple people see it. That's called target marketing. So you have to segment, as Michael just said, and you have to segment it into all kinds of categories like demographic, psychographic, technographic, behavioral characteristics, you know, geographic characteristics. And just to give you an idea, this is really super interesting. A friend of mine is actually a production assistant on the road for some big country artist. I forget who it was, but it was this traditional country artist. And I said, so you guys traveling on a tour bus? And he goes, oh, no, we fly. And I go, wow, you guys fly everyone? And he goes, oh, no, just once a week. And I go, really? And he goes, when? On the weekends. And I go, why? And he goes, think about it. Traditional country artists, right? Country, traditional American values. Married, kids, they don't go out on Monday nights. They don't go out on Wednesday nights. They go out on the weekends. So that's when we play. Now that is called, right? That is called target marketing and segmentation and marketing to your segment. So, I mean, literally just understanding your audience, who is your most likely audience, can really help you utilize the resources you have the best possible way that you can. So you really have to think about this, you guys, and really get clear about it. Now, again, if you're a film and TV person, you might say, well, you know, there's specific directors that I'm going to target, or there's specific TV shows that I'm going to target, or there's specific song pluggers, and understanding exactly what I know they like and need that I'm going to target. And you can get that specific. There's specific games that I'm going to actually try to target, you know? That's very, very huge here. All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about competition now. So we're still in research. Now what you have to do is you have to look at your competition. So what you do now is you look at your competition and you ask yourself, you know, who are my competitors? Now, this is such a big problem for most musicians, because typically musicians don't look at competition correctly. There is a gentleman by the name of Mike Porter that wrote the Porter's Five Forces. He was a Harvard University professor, and he speaks very, very detailed and did a lot of research on competition. And he talks about the Porter's Five Forces. Now, in the Porter's Five Forces, he defines competition as anything that can take away from the profitability of a company, anything. So it's not just someone that sounds exactly like you. That's what he calls rivalry. But there's all these other types of competition, like substitute competition, new entrants, you know, suppliers, you know, price sensitive customers, and even things like what's called cannibalism. That is when you create products that actually compete against your own products, right? Like maybe releasing songs too often or playing shows too, you know, too close to another in a mile radius that's too close. All those things can end up competing against yourself. So you have to think about competition more broadly. But generally speaking, I think for our purposes, maybe it's other people that share a similar audience, right? So look at some of the other writers that are similar to you. Look who's writing for certain television shows, or maybe look at other artists that are playing in your area, or maybe, you know, think about the tours that you might get on and just look at everything that they do right, right? Analyze their strengths and learn from them. Look at what they do wrong and don't do it. But most importantly, you guys, you want to find your competitive advantage. What it is that you're doing that is different, that is relevant to your target audience, where you can position yourself to be unique, different, and remarkable. This is
Can I interject? Because this is my favorite. Bobby knows this about me. Some of you regulars know. I've read over 800 marketing books. I love marketing. To me, it's a creative, challenging game. What Bobby is just talking about is your unique selling proposition. Mm-hmm. What is it that makes you stand out from the crowd? And to simply say, well, my music is better, that's your opinion and that's very subjective. When I learned about a USP, unique selling proposition, when I started Taxi, and I was reading from people like Seth Godin, you know, a lot of the great marketing book authors that we've both read, I'm sure. And I went, unique selling proposition. The first one I came up with was Taxi, the computer vehicle for the music industry, because we use computers to get your music from point A to point B. Remember, this is 1994. There was no taxi.com. There was no internet, you know, for the masses as we know it today, certainly. And I realized that wasn't working. People from labels were calling me up going, so do you guys deliver computers to my record label? No. And I realized I'd gotten it wrong. And I spent a year trying to find what it was that we were doing special. And I came up with the world's leading independent A&R company.
Yeah.
I could have just said the independent A&R company because that defines us. Oh, an outsourced A&R company. But the the world's leading, I think it was a book called Positioning by Don Rees, and I can't remember his name.
Jack Rees and Al Trout.
Yeah, Jack Rees and Al Trout.
It is a must read.
Absolutely. It's just simply called Positioning. Yeah. And they said, you know, are you the first at something? Are you the best at something? Well, I was the world's leader because nobody had ever done what Taxi did. So we became the world's leading independent A&R company. And here we are 30 years since I came up with that, and it still works. Sorry to interrupt, but perfect.
I mean, your company is a perfect example of finding a unique spot in the marketplace. And filling it, and then having a positioning statement that people can relate to. And did you guys hear how he did that in one line? Right? A lot of times when you ask people, like, well, explain how you're different, and they're like, you know, and they start, you know, flapping.
Half an hour later, they're still talking, right?
Exactly. You need that positioning statement. So this is huge, you guys. And I think if you were to talk to any big entrepreneurs or business success people, they would just say, find the need and fill it, and then do something that nobody else is doing it and doing it better than them. And, you know, potentially being the first person to do it obviously doesn't hurt either, right? So in any case, all right, good. So then we have competition. Now that you have all these wonderful things, you should do what's called testing and feedback. So testing and feedback is just a doubt reducer. It's just putting some feelers out there to get a sense for what people think about your idea. Now, a lot of people have a problem with this, because a lot of musicians sometimes are insecure about letting someone see something or hear something or even just telling someone about an idea, because they're insecure that someone will crash it or smash it or something of that nature. But, you know, listen, I would not sit around writing a book called Personal Finance for Musicians, which is another book that I wrote, by the way, unless I did the research with my potential target market group to find out whether or not they would actually care about a book like that, whether or not they need it, what are some of the issues that frighten them, what are some of the areas where they're afraid or uncertain about. And I did all that research, and then boom, wrote the book, and oh, it worked. That's the prize, right? So you guys, it's not like you just kind of like sit around in a room and write it. And then after 4 years, like, go, okay, now someone like, you know, love my idea. And that's called hope. And hope is not a strategy. We'll say it again many times throughout this presentation. Hope is not a strategy.
That should be the mantra, baby. Hope is not your
hope
strategy.
Hope is not a strategy. Yeah. You know? So what we're doing is we're looking at, you know, your audience. And it doesn't have to be a prototype. It could just be the idea. You could just say, hey, you guys, I'm thinking about writing a book called Personal Finance for Musicians that basically helps, you know, artists really understand the basics of like generating income and getting out of debt and building credit and building emergency funds and, you know, and starting to invest and things like that. You know, the reason why I'm doing that is because so many artists make a lot of money and they end up losing it. And so many sports people make a lot of money and they end up losing it. And probably you yourself right now are struggling paycheck to paycheck and you're living off Top Ramen. Let's change that. Are you guys ready? And it's like, yes, I think that's a great idea. And boom, I wrote it. You know, I mean, so it's testing and feedback. So you might reach out to people. Now, here's what's important. It has to be the right people. Because if you reach out to your mom, hey, mom, what do you think of my song? Oh, you're so talented, son. I love you. Right, exactly. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about getting critical, like honest feedback that's unbiased. You need to get at least 30 people so that it's statistically significant. Because obviously, the more people that you get, it reduces the odds that that was by chance, right? Because the more people that you get, it reduces the fact that it was just like, it just, oh, that's just randomly happened.
And, right? So and I'd like to add, let's say that you've identified that your target market is musicians between the ages of 22 and 35. Don't reach out to your friends who are in that category because you're going to get a biased opinion. Pick them randomly. You don't want to know these people.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And we could get into way more detail about this because creating a random sample could be actually difficult. So a lot of times people do what's called a convenient sample. But in any case, we only have a little time. So if any of you guys are interested in this, you can always go out and get the book, right?
Well, so, go ahead, plug the book.
Yeah, so I mean, basically everything I'm talking about right now, you guys, is in the book, Music Marketing for the DIY Musician, which is available very easily on Amazon. And you could just, you know, look up the book, look for the second edition. In the future, obviously, there'll be a third edition. And, you know, hey, not only would I appreciate knowing that you guys are benefiting from this, you know, of course, you know, it's satisfying when I see people walking down the street and they have my book in their hand. It just makes me go.
I want everybody to know I don't make a penny from you guys buying this book. I say that now. Actually, Liz might put in the affiliate link where we make 50 cents if you buy one. But you know what? Look, I've read 800 marketing books. Before we started this interview today, I went through and looked at the book again, just the table of contents. And went, wow. You literally covered everything that it took me 800 books to learn is covered in your book. And I don't believe that people have to read it cover to cover in a linear fashion. Again, with all your books, they can be read like that, but they can also be used as a reference. You're getting ready to develop your unique selling proposition. Let's see what Bobby has to say about that, rather than reading about it a year ago and trying to remember it. So just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. Yeah, it's organized that way. And, you know, I mean, essentially, I did read 800 books and I did get a master's degree in this stuff and I've been thinking about it my whole entire life, you know, so this is my life's work and I'm sharing it with you guys and certainly hope you benefit from it. That's, the whole intention behind this. All right. So then moving on, once you have all that stuff, you guys, now we're done with the research process and we can move on to the next process, which is the goal setting process, right? So now you might ask, how is goal setting different from vision? Well, vision is where you want to go and the goals are the stepping stones on the way to where you want to go. So for example, if you knew that ultimately you wanted to end up in Vegas, well, then you know, okay, well, we got to start by getting on the 10, right? So
10 freeway. for those of you who don't live in LA.
Right, of course. My bad, of course, right. You got to get on the 10 freeway first, right? So what you do is you focus all your energy on getting to the 10, right? You don't start worrying about all the other stuff. We know the 10 is on the way to the freeway. So let's focus, you know, to Vegas rather. So let's focus on that. What do we need to get there? What we need to get in our car? We need to go this way. We need to fill it up with gas. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff that you could do. And maybe that would be the short-term goal that you point everything toward. Now, the reason why you want to do that is because you want to get focused. You know, if you're sitting on the beach and you're looking out and you look at this ocean, you get confused. Which way do I swim? Oh, I don't know, so I just won't swim at all. But when you say, I'm just going to go from here to that buoy, boom, you go to that buoy. Now that you're at that buoy, you stand up in the buoy, you look around and you go, oh my gosh, look, I can see an island. And the next one will be swimming to the island. You have to do it like that. Otherwise, if you just kind of just go for everything at once in all kinds of different directions without any kind of point, it's very easy to get depressed, to give up, to get confused. So we have to set goals, okay? Those goals need to be SMART. That stands for specific, measurable, attainable, roadmapped, and time-based. So it can't be vague. Like you can't say, let's just say the gym metaphor works really well. So if you don't mind, you can't walk into a gym and say, I want to get buffed, because what is buffed, right? So basically you have to say things like, I would like to reduce body fat and I would like to reduce my waist size. Then it's got to be measured. I'd like to reduce my body fat from 25% to 12%. I'd like to reduce my waist size from 37 inches to 32 inches. See how that's more specific and measurable? Then you need to make sure it's attainable by talking to a trainer. Then you need to roadmap it. Here's how we're going to do it, right? And then you have to think about the time in 6 months, a year. And that's SMART goals. Everybody watching this, write them down right now. You guys should be following along with a pad and paper and starting to work on this stuff. Okay? There you go. Good deal. All right. So now what we do is we need strategies to achieve those goals. And the strategies to achieve those goals consist of company branding, product, price, placement, and measuring. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and go over the first two, which is company branding and product branding. So what is a brand? Or what is the process of branding? So branding is the process of communicating an identity to your target audience that is relatable, consistent, believable, you know, unique, so that it creates a positive image in the minds of the customer. In other words, it creates an image in the way that you want your audience to think about you. So in other words, if I put out, like, let's just say, for example, certain messages, let's just say, for example, and I do it consistently, correctly, relevantly, believably, then it's going to create an image in the mind of the customer that is exactly what I had intended.
And ethically. Now, don't leave ethically off the list because...
Oh, yes, absolutely. Ethically is very important, too. Yeah, that's very, very big part of it, too, as well. I mean, so... Now, here's just to kind of give you an idea, like, so if there's one person here communicating something to here, the problem is that sometimes things get trapped in the middle, which makes whatever messages I put out received differently by different people. So, for example, we have cultural differences. So I might say something that culturally relates to, you know, an audience, and then maybe, but others are going to perceive it differently. All right. So then there's also things that are called, schematic memory. Schematic memory are the neural connections we make with stimuli in the environment, so that when I am sort of, when I encounter that stimulus, it's going to trigger something in my mind that's going to make me look at something one way as opposed to the way someone else looks at it. Then there's what's called values. Some people value different things than others. And then there's, of course, peer influence. So your peers can actually influence the way you perceive things in the world. So the point I'm trying to make is you've got to be really clear about who you're communicating an identity to, right? What it is you're trying to say, and you better be consistent, because there's all of this stuff that can get in the way and can screw that up, right? So that's really the point I'm trying to make here. So how do you create a brand? Number one, you come up with a name. So Michael came up with, you know, Taxi, you know, Music. And there was a really good reason for why he came up with that name too. You know, from what I understand of the history, it's because taxi is like the vehicle, the taxi ride to sort of getting you to where you want to go.
Gets you from point A to point B, which is what musicians want to do with their music and their career. Yeah. And also, I wanted a word that everybody knew, just like Apple, you know, for computers. That's actually kind of what prompted me to do it. And I thought, well, if they can use Apple for a computer, I can use taxi for a music company.
Sure.
And it's everybody, it's one of only 9 universal words on the planet Earth, and you get constant reinforcement every time you turn on your TV and you see a yellow car go by in the background of a scene, or you're out in traffic and you see a yellow car. Subtly, that's telling people, oh yeah, taxi, the music company, if they've seen the ads before. So it all and meshes.
So this was, you know, a methodical decision, you guys. It wasn't just like some random thing like, oh, let's call our band this, you know what I mean? Now, sometimes bands do that and it just works, you know, but there's a lot of people that do stuff and it doesn't work. Just letting you know, the majority of the stuff that you see that works represents a small percentage of everybody trying. So don't use that as the norm, please.
Really tiny.
Well, Led Zeppelin didn't do that,
yeah.
You know, because everything fell into place for Led Zeppelin. It doesn't fall into the place necessarily for you. So.
And it was a different time in history where we didn't have these guys or computers or as many TV channels, all this competing stuff. So being Led Zeppelin back then stuck out more just because there was less stuff flying at the potential customers.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. For sure. So you come up with a name, then you come up with a slogan. So, I beg your pardon. Let's go to logo, right? Because first you have a name, then you have a logo. There's all different types of logo. That's what's called a word mark, a letter mark, a brand mark, and also a combined mark. So typically speaking, taxi would be a combined mark. It's got the taxi cab and then the word taxi over it. So it has an image and a word. Sometimes like solo artists will just have a word, like you'll have Pink and she kind of writes it in an interesting font. And then you have Mariah Carey, which interestingly writes it in a more feminine font, right? So the fonts are helping to brand the artist, right? Then you have sometimes like the Rolling Stones just has the tongue, that's called the brand mark, or the Misfits just have the crimson skull, you know, or Nike just has the swish, you know, so that's called the brand mark. And then of course, you have a word mark, a letter mark rather, where sometimes you'll have people that use acronyms in their logos, like let's just say BMW or something of that nature. Then you could have a slogan, like BMW has the logo and that underneath it, just to let you know what it is. It's the ultimate driving machine.
Unique selling proposition again.
Yeah, exactly. You have ZZ Top, that little old band from Texas. You know, if you guys remember that band, House of Pain, they had fine malt lyrics in there, you know, just to kind of give a little bit of their heritage, Irish heritage roots and you know, and just kind of help you kind of see a package. It's all kind of helping you to see, again, they're communicating their identity to you. Some people even go as far as then having a mascot. Now, this is something typically a lot of artists don't have because artists have a lot of personality to begin with. But generally speaking, like Kanye West had Dropout Bear, Sublime had Lou Dog, you know, Iron Maiden has Eddie the Head, you know, Pink Floyd had Angie the Pig, you know, you know, and then of course, you know, how do you sell insurance? Well, you have Aflac the duck. How do you sell insurance? You got like a little wise, you know, ass like Australian like lizard walking around. How do you sell cereal? Well, you got like some cracked out tiger going, they're great, you know. How do you sell cookies? You know, you get make a story about three elves in a tree. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to create an image in your mind, a personality. So when you think of Keebler, it's like, oh, they're so cute little elves making trees. How so, like making cookies in a tree, how wholesome. You know, they're trying to create this idea in your head. So you can use a mascot. How about personality? How are you going to present yourself? Are you going to be energetic, outgoing, you know, fired up, you know, or are you going to be sort of more restrained? Are you going to be the girl next door, kind of like Taylor Swift? How she's always like, you know, oh, she's just so innocent, you know, and then, or are you going to be the Miley Cyrus where she was revved
not
up,
innocent,
crazy, getting into trouble, you know what I mean? So how are you going to dress? You know, are you going to show up to the meetings in your ties and suits? You know, are you going to have an office in, on the corner in Beverly Hills? Are you going to do it somewhere else? It's like all of this stuff creates an image in the minds of the customer, which is all very important that you guys, of how you present yourselves, right? And you have to be consistent because otherwise it can be confusing to people. You could even go as far as who you associate with. So listen, you know, people go to Harvard for a reason, because then as soon as someone sees their resume and they're associated with Harvard, it automatically changes the perception, right? So the managers you get, the agents you get, the producers you get, the companies that you establish yourself with, the schools you go to, the gear you play, all that stuff is going to create an association in your mind, you know?
If I may interject again, you are so right. You're so, I can't believe how much of this stuff you can spit out like that. I'm not that good at doing what you're doing. But the association thing, I was on the phone the other night with the music library CEO, and he said, honestly, when I get calls from the outside world or emails and somebody says they're a taxi member, I respond to them because I know you've done so much to educate them and they know the drill on how the industry works. So those people I'll talk to. Somebody who's just a random person, they probably don't know the drill and they're gonna waste my time and look to me, them, the library owner, to educate them. So the association thing is stronger than we might all think.
Yeah, absolutely, you guys. So that's why you wanna associate yourself. You know, and listen, here's a total thing about, you know, associations as well, is collaborating with people. Right? Because essentially your brand equity might not be kind of as valued in the marketplace as maybe somebody else's. So you partner with them. Now all of a sudden, hey, I got this song and boom, you're on it. And now you're more credible just because you're collabing with that person.
Absolutely.
So that's very, very important. Yeah. Yeah. So all of that, you guys, even gestures, hand signals. You know, Michael Jackson knew what he was doing every time he wore a glove on his right hand and moon danced. Like, you know, I could do I don't even know how to dance or do a moon dance, and I can pretend to do one and you automatically go Michael Jackson. You know, if we were playing charades or something and I tried to do a moon rock, you go Michael Jackson, right? So just one little gesture and you know who I'm talking about. You know, this, a lot of people forget what this is, but this is like, you know, Ronnie James Dio came up with this. This sort of means rock and roll or whatever. Or it's this way, right? It means rock and roll. When Miley Cyrus sticks her tongue out and puts it on her cheek, I could do that. I'm not going to. Don't worry.
Thank you.
I could. Yeah, exactly. I don't even want to see myself do that. But like, if I did it and I say, which pop star is this? You'd go Miley Cyrus. You know, Lady Gaga had like that monster claw thing. You know, so these are all like symbolisms that people create that also help to brand them. Another way you could brand them is by branding your fans. You know, like you call your fans something. Like, for example, I teach at USC. They call the students Trojans, right? It's to make them feel like they're part of a family.
Why would they name their students after a brand of condoms? I've never understood that. Oh, not that Trojan.
Yeah. It's not that Trojan. You know, the UCLA, no, it's definitely, it's not that Trojan. I know you're only joking.
Yes.
The Bruins are the Bear, I'm sorry, the USC, UCLA are the Bruins, right? But not everybody does this, right? So it could be a way of how you brand it. I mean, Michael, you have such a huge community, you know, at of taxi members. You know, essentially, if you came up with kind of a nice, affectionate way of calling all your members, like whatever that might be, taxis or taxiites or whatever.
Taxiites, right.
Taxiites, yeah. I mean, essentially.
I called them dear passengers for the first 30 years of the company, and I just dropped that a couple of years ago because I felt.
Did you really?
Yeah, I went back to dear songwriters, artists, composers, and producers. So it more. It identified the potential readers.
More specific, yeah. But you were doing that in your newsletters and stuff probably, right?
Yeah, for years.
Telling stories is obviously a really great way to capture people. If the company has a story, you know, an interesting story about it. These are all ways to brand yourself, you guys, okay? Now, just to be clear, your company is a brand, but then also the things that you create are brands too. So, for example, we have Taxi, the company. But then you have the Road Rally, the conference. You notice how Road Rally, Taxi, It all makes sense, right? It all fits together, right?
And taxi dispatch, the quick turnaround thing. Yeah, it's all thematic.
Yeah, it all makes sense, right? Yeah. So definitely, so your products are also brands as well. So what you name your songs, it's all connected. All right. All right, moving along down the line now, let's talk about product development. Product development is now you have to take that brand and you have to, obviously, you have to take that brand and you have to create the product. So when you create the product, you need to make sure that it comes out the way that you imagined it. It's kind of like an architect. An architect has a design on paper, right? It's this concept, but now you have to make it come to life. You have to have the right producers, engineers, studios, people involved to make sure that your idea comes to life the way you wanted it to. So every web designer you hire, every team member you hire, every producer, engineer, every other co-writer, everyone has to be aligned with this idea and concept to ensure that it comes out the way you want it to. And the bigger the companies, the harder it is to do that because everyone has to be on the right page, right? When you're talking about product development as well, you also have to think of customer service because customer service is part of the product. So again, you know, Michael has a customer service policy of, hey, you're not happy, we'll give you your money back. I mean, that is basically a customer service strategy. So what kind of customer services strategies do you have? Like, for example, when you record people, hey, we're going to mix until you're happy, or we'll give you 3 mixes, or we'll make sure that the turnaround is within 24 hours. Or if you're a band, you're going to make sure to hang out backstage and sign everybody's autograph, or you're going to get everybody's number or email address and send them birthday cards, right? So think about all the things that you do where the customer service strategy is really good, and you'll see a successful company behind it. Right? So think about the restaurants you go to. Why do you go there? Well, they're clean. The ambience is nice. They're very pleasant. The parking, you know, is great. You know, that's customer service. So you have to have that too. Now let's go into price. So now we talk about price really quickly. So pricing is the next step in the marketing process. And I think that everybody could agree that price is a very, very big part of marketing. You know, when you walk into the grocery market after listening to this, you're going to see orange juice that's, you know, cost $3.49. But if you buy, you know, two of them, it costs, you know, let's just say $5. You know, so in other words, you go, huh, $3.49? I could just spend a little bit more and get the $5. That means $2.50 and $2.50. So I'm saving $1.49. And what you don't realize is that their, you know, cost of goods is only $1. So they're making $1.50 anyway, and they just got you to move more revenue, you know, inventory. So this is all marketing. They all strategize this way. They all know what they're doing, and you can do the same thing too.
And it's now, not it's not evil. Just because they strategized, you're getting something out of the deal too. You just save money on your orange juice, even though they're still making a profit. And you may discover that you like their orange juice is a little less tart than the brand you've been drinking. So there's that.
Yeah, there absolutely is that, you guys. The other reasoning is that it's a confusing world we live in, and we need help making decisions. So these types of things help you to make decisions, essentially, right? It's not like they have some evil trick, right? And everybody responds to this. Now, you guys might be wondering, well, what am I gonna price? You know, I mean, when I go into licensing one of my songs, they're gonna make me an offer, and probably I don't have a whole lot of negotiation power. So, you know, well, you can educate yourself on what is normal and what is fair, and you can educate yourself on the different things that you're gonna be licensing. So you have a general idea about, like, you know, what things are going to go for. If you're a band playing, you'll probably play for free, or you'll, like, basically maybe pay to play. But, you know, soon enough, you're going to be selling merch at your shows. You might be selling your vinyl at your shows. You might be making NFTs. I mean, whatever the case is, this is where you can execute these pricing strategies. Here's a couple really, really quick. You can actually play for free or give away t-shirts for free. I would say, no, don't do that. Give it away at no cost to the customer. It's a branding thing. It's a little bit different psychologically. It's not free. It's at no cost to you. This cost me a lot of money to make, right? You could do bundle prices. So in other words, you can buy the album, but hey, if you pay a little bit more, you can also get the t-shirt and the sticker, right? And make sure that that all works out. You could do what's called lost leader pricing. That basically means, hey, everybody, go over to our merch booth and get a free patch. And then they go over to there to get the free patch. And then you have an attractive person that says, hey, why don't you get a shirt for the patch too? You know, there's all different types of loss of pricing strategies. There's one called also the end of 9 and 5. So just go ahead and look at Spotify. They charge $4.99 for their, you know, memberships, or $19.99 or $14.99. It's like, why? Why not just say 15? Because 15 is way, way, way more money than $14.99 psychologically, right? So if you don't believe me, like, you know, just a while back, I had to sell a home. It was, you know, it was well over $500,000 home. No big deal or anything. But the retailer said, sell it, or the real estate person said, sell it for $4.99. And I go, why? And he goes, because $4.99 is not $500,000. In someone's mind. If you sell it for $510 or $509, now it's a $500,000 home. You sell it for $499, it's like, oh, four, that's good. It's a good price. Right? It's all psychological. So that's pricing. Now let's talk about distribution, placing. So now you have to put your products and services in front of your target audience so they can conveniently buy it, license, book it. Now, when you do place your products and services, you have to think about your customers. You have to think about where they're going to look for stuff, where they're going to find stuff. And you have to make sure that your products are there, obviously. So again, since you guys are a lot like in the sync world that are watching this, Taxi is a placement strategy, right? It's one of the many things that you can do. And I say one of the many things you can do because Taxi itself will tell you don't rely on us only. There's all kinds of other stuff that you should do too as well. But it's definitely one of the things that you could do to make sure that your music gets in front of your target audience so they can conveniently buy it, book it, license it, right? So it's an opportunity. So you guys need to think about how you're going to license your songs, how you're going to like book your gigs, where you're going to place your songs. You know, and try to be, I mean, your records rather. So don't just go through DistroKid to like Spotify. I mean, it's just like there's so many other things that you can do to sell your music, you know. And again, you guys can get the book, right? All right. And then let's move on to promotion now, because I want to wind down. Maybe Michael's got some questions, so we got some other stuff to do too. But when you talk about promotion, look how much promotion there is. There's publicity, there's advertising, there's internet, there's word of mouth, there's guerrilla, there's radio, there's sponsors, there's direct marketing, there's face-to-face and sales promotions. And just to kind of give you a little bit of idea, publicity is doing things like submitting your press kits and your EPKs to like bloggers that will write about you. Publicity is called earned media. You earn it. So you give people information about you and then they earn, or you earn them writing about you. And definitely one thing that's so important, you guys, is I have to be able to Google you and find other people talking about you rather than you talking about yourself. So you need to get people to review you. You need to get people to write, you know, do write-ups about you. Then there's what's called advertising. Make no mistake, you guys, a lot of the social media that blows up out there, a lot of the websites that blow up out there, they all advertise. You could even do boosts on Instagram or boosts on Facebook, and then you can move into more complicated stuff with, you know, using Facebook advertisement or Google ads. You know, it gets a little bit more complicated because the targeting is harder. But an Instagram boost is simple. A TikTok boost is simple, and it can push you out in front of a couple more people, right? So there's advertising. Then there's what's called internet. So, of course, we know building your own website, doing social media, having a great content strategy. Right now, a really good way to promote yourself is with short form content. So you guys should be pumping that out. The key ultimately to internet marketing is consistency. I know it's a pain in the butt, but you got to get into some sort of consistent form and you have to engage with people. You can't just be pumping stuff out. And you can't just be pumping stuff out like, click on my link, check out my single, da la 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 la. That's called sell, 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 sell. You've got to use the jab, 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 hook philosophy. Throw stuff out there, give some information out there, give some information out there, give some information out there, then go in for the knockout, where people are just going to get bored if you're always selling to them.
Do stuff right? Like, you know, if you're working on a new album or working on a new single, put out test versions of it and ask the people on social media. Do you like the song with a male vocal or a female vocal better? Do you like it more keyboard driven or more guitar driven? The fact that they will engage and they will feel emotional ownership, and then they're going to tell their friends about it. Wow, I heard this great song today, and it was really cool. The band actually is letting those of us who follow them on Instagram determine whether the songs have a male or female vocal. Oh, really? Which band is that? So now you've got something remarkable, which Bobby and I both learned from Seth Godin. Remarkable means that one person will remark about it to another. So just be creative like that, but you're right. Musicians hate to sell. People hate to be sold to, but they like to be made aware of something that would probably interest them and that they would like to have or participate in.
Yeah, and to be clear, promotion is the process of informing your target audience about like the features and benefits of your products and services and getting them to care. So you want people to care as much as you care about your stuff. You love your art, you're excited about your art, and now you want people to also be excited about it. So you gotta kind of throw yourself out there, because there's nothing more depressing in my mind than creating art that doesn't get reciprocated by your intended audience. It just ends up in your drawer on your hard drive. That's kind of depressing. I mean, it's fun to create, but then you want to see the joy in other people's eyes, and you got to put yourself out there in all these creative ways, such as the ones that Michael just suggested. So there's internet, of course. Then of course we can move on and we could talk about things like word of mouth marketing. That is getting people to talk about your products and your services without you doing anything. And the way to do that is to be really amazing, or you could be controversial, or you can like make sure to get it out to the right influencers or tastemakers, because these are the people that talk. Or you could do mystery kind of marketing, coming soon, you know, just all that stuff gets people kind of excited. Contests, that gets people to talk. Guerrilla Street Marketing is doing stuff like, you know, hey, if I go to my post box and I see somebody's, I beg your pardon, if I'm walking down the street and someone hands me a flyer or something like that, or if I see a sticker on somebody's, you know, laptop computer, or maybe a poster somewhere hanging up outside, you know, that's all guerrilla street marketing stuff. Or street stencils on the ground, you know, like using spray chalk or something like that that comes up out of the street. Harry Styles does this. I just saw the Harry Styles, Harry's House thing on the sidewalk not too long ago. Kendrick Lamar does this, you know. All these kind of big artists do that. All right, moving on. Then there is also radio promotion. Don't forget, like, you might not listen to radio, but radio is not dead. Radio is still alive, maybe not to the capacity that it used to be, but it's still a way to get your music promoted. You could do sponsorships. So for example, when I was a professional drummer, you could see right behind me, that is the Bobby Borg model drumstick. It actually was a model drumstick, had my signature on it and stuff like that, you know. So they promoted me and I promoted them. You know, it was endorsed by Tama and Dean Markley and Zildjian and, you know, Aquarian Heads and Remo Heads and just all these companies, and they would put ads about me. I would promote them. It's this, you know, this symbiotic relationship between two parties. Okay, then what else can you do? Direct marketing. Hey, sending postcards, calling people, believe it or not. Hey, Bobby, don't forget our gig is happening tomorrow night. You're on the guest list. 2 weeks ago, I got the postcard. You know, 2 weeks before that, I got the direct email. You know, you got to hit people from different ways, because then that kind of, you know, they see you in one place, they see you in another place, they see you in another place. They're like, wow, you know, I'm seeing this everywhere. I need to go to this event, let's just say, for example. Then there is what's called sales promotions. And sales promotions are things like, hey, if you sign up, it's sales promotion. When I speak at the Taxi Road Rally, sometimes I say, hey, you guys, the book's available on Amazon for $35, but you could get it from me right now at like this price, you know. And because I have a limited quantity and I make it available for you guys to purchase, let's just say at the Taxi Road Rally, right? That's called a sales promotion. And sales promotion relies on something called urgency. That means if you do it now, you can get it. But if you wait, you might not. You know what I mean? And there's no trickery involved. It might be like my publisher sent me books, let's just say, for example, and allowed me to buy them at cost, which let's just say might be, I don't, you know, what, 20 bucks or something. So then I could just turn that around and go, hey, you guys, I got 10 bucks, 20 bucks. You know, they let me buy it at cost. I'll let you buy it at cost too, so you could save that money. And you go, oh shit, you know, I want to save $50. I'm going to get it now. That's called sales promotions. You guys could do that with your merch at your shows and stuff like that. It's a form of marketing. And then here's the most important one is face-to-face marketing. Getting eye to eye with people, being able to shake somebody's hand, being able to give someone your elevator pitch, being a great person that people like, because people will do business with people that they like. So going to the taxi road rally, being able to walk up to someone and say, hey, Bobby, I know you're that guy that like speaks on Michael's show all the time. And, you know, I have your books and you wrote, you know, this book and this book and this book. And, you know, hey, you know, thanks very much for the stuff you do. Hey, I was wondering, you know, could we sit down and maybe, you know, I could buy you a coffee or whatever. We'll have dinner. I wanted to play you some music and ask you a couple questions and stuff. So there's so much about that that's right. First of all, you knew who I was. You knew how to pronounce my name. You didn't look at my thing and go, Mr. Burge, what do you do? You know, like you were prepared. You came to me. You knew my history. You flattered me. You made me feel good about myself, right? These are all key things about how to be a good communicator and how to be a good face-to-face seller. You know, so I would suggest buy books on sales, buy books on negotiation, buy books about how to make friends and make people like you, because this is one of the number one sales tactics in the world. You guys, this is so important, and it's such an important skill. Now, there are a lot of people that suffer from, you know, social anxiety and aren't the best at like communicating and stuff like that. You have to get good. Go take an acting class, take a public speaking class. Go take
improv class.
Improv class. Well, Jesus, I've taken improv classes, guys. After taking an improv class, there's nothing that will embarrass you. I mean,
nothing. Nothing will embarrass you.
There's nothing. I mean, they had me standing in a circle, like, and this is not that long ago, so I'm an adult. Stand in the circle, right? No music. Everybody's looking at you, and then the professor goes, "Dance." And I'm like, what? Dart dancing. I'm like, oh, please, are you kidding me? And then, of course, after that, you're like, what really could embarrass you? You know what I mean? So it just tries to get you out of your inhibitions, really, you know? And it tries to get you to just come out of your shell and just go, I don't care. I'm going to walk up to this person. But when you do it, you have to do a little research. Obviously, you can't just make a fool out of yourself, and you have to be outgoing. You have to be a good salesperson. You also have to know the world doesn't revolve around you. So you have to be respectful. You have to ask what you're going to give to them back, right? It's not just a you world that we live in. So you have to be gracious. You have to practice the attitude of gratitude. Reach out to people when you don't need things, just to say happy holidays or hi. Or, you know, take them out to lunch and stuff. So this is, you guys, probably one of the most number one promotional technique you can do that nobody ever talks about.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I was going to interrupt you 30 seconds ago. And if you don't mind, I'm going to interrupt now to interject what's important. I wrote this down about 5 minutes ago when you were talking about think about your potential buyers. What's important to you may not be important to them, probably isn't. So you need to get out of your own head and think about, why do people listen to my music? Why do they like my music? It's not about you. It's all about them. And develop, you were talking about this before, but you didn't use the word persona. And persona is, develop a person. Who is your buyer, by taking the demographic, the psychographic, excuse me, and developing a persona? Is the person that is most likely, based on experience or survey or research, most likely to buy your music, is it a man or a woman? Is it a 13-year-old, a 25-year-old, a 38-year-old, a 65-year-old? Are they from the Midwest? Are they from the Northeast? Are they from the Southwest? All these things can be found out about your potential customers if you have 30 or more, like Bobby mentioned earlier, and go, okay, well, what do I need to do to reach more of those people? Because every ounce of effort or every dollar you spend on reaching, let's say that you do straight up pop music, top 40 pop music that would definitely appeal to a young, probably somewhat female-leaning audience, 13 to 20-year-olds, why then would you market traditional country music to them? They probably can't relate. And vice versa, trying to take, you know, a Britney Spears, now she's a bad example, but Ariana Grande, and trying to market her to a 70-year-old lady from Oklahoma that just loves traditional country, that's not going to work. So everything Bobby has said today is pure gold, but you are absolutely right. The root of all of it is knowing who is your potential customer, because all the other stuff falls into place when you know who you're marketing to.
Sure. Yeah, it's a big part. And of course, knowing the benefit that you provide to them.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times people even say, you know, be careful not to market your song to film and television, but market the emotion, maybe, you know. Yeah. What is your music going to emotionally do to uplift the scene where the guy's grandma is getting, you know, buried in the scene in the movie? You know, how does your music going to support that? I once heard a music supervisor say, I'm in the film business, not the music business, right? So you've got to get into the mind of the need of the film. So anyway, all right, let's move on from promotion to measuring. So now measuring is just analytics, you know, and of course these days, because of social media, there's so much more opportunity to like look at analytics. You could just go to your Spotify for Artists and look at your analytics. You can even go to your analytics on your DistroKid. You can look at analytics on my YouTube channel. You look at analytics on your Instagram posts, you know, and just start to understand the watch time and click-through rate and all that kind of stuff, because there's really a lot to learn from that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, for example, you know, when I first started, my YouTube channel and stuff, at first for many years, it was just a hub of where I like uploaded videos so that I can give it to a link to my students just to watch. But recently I decided, oh, I'm going to like make this a channel, you know, and like make it more of a channel for the public. And I started to like notice that when I was reading my analytics, you had what's called a hockey stick. You know, that basically means that it goes like this and then it goes back up. So I'm like, something about the intro that I need to fix, you know? And I studied that and I just realized that, you know, the, hey, how's it going, everybody? My name is blah, 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 blah. People like skip through that just to get to the meat and potatoes. So then you start coming up with, you know, more impacting ways to win the scroll, so to speak, or win the click, so that when people click on it, you get their attention right away. So maybe you start with like the hook and then you come in with the details, you know, so you have to read the analytics. And then all of a sudden now my videos are more flat, which means that people are watching the beginning and they're watching everything, which is what you want, right? So you have to look at your analytics and then try to improve, right? You have to have measuring strategies in place. All right. So then once we have that, then you have to put it on paper, because if it's not on paper, it's only vapor. If you have these ideas running around in your head and you don't put them down on paper and see how they all work together and connect, it's amazing what happens when you start writing this stuff all down, because you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. And it just starts putting it together. It gives you a plan of attack that you can have on your desk that's staring at you. It's a communication tool that you can also give to investors. It is a communication tool you can give to your managers, your agents, your producers, your band members, so that everybody's on the same page. Then, of course, you have to execute it. Now, execute sometimes, well, it comes down to internal motivation, external motivation. When you're externally motivated, it's like, I gotta make money, or I gotta get out there and work, you know, or I better do this because it's due on this date. Internal motivation is because you have to do it. So just to give you an example.
You mean have to, like the cramming for a test, or have to because—
No, this have to.
Okay, it's who you are.
It's the soul, yeah. So after I retired from being a professional drummer and being on the road, I mean, literally there was a tour and I just said, I'm not going. You know, I had something I felt I needed to do and say. And that was, I had to get all these ideas out about the music industry and why are musicians so naive and like how to better understand the business. I felt like I became as passionate about that as I was about my drumming. So now I was doing that 15 hours a day. And literally, you guys, did it for 5 years before the publication of my first book. How did I survive? You know, barely. You know what I mean? It was just like, I put all my heart and soul into it, and I was doing it because I felt I needed to do it. Now, just recently, there's someone that's writing a book and they're trying to pick my brain about it. And I'm already just going, this guy is not, he shouldn't write a book, because it's just like, basically, dude, why don't you partner with me? You pump out books all the time. We could have this thing out in a year. And I go, I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to say it because I don't want to offend them, but it's like, because you don't have what it takes to write a book. Because what you're doing is you want the book for some external sort of purpose, like the money, the fame, or whatever that nature, the recognition, but not because you really want to. And what you need to do is you need to have those qualities, because it's not all like glory. There's a lot of up and downs. And if you don't have that passion, you're not going to overcome those up and downs. So to be internally motivated, obviously, is the best type of motivation. It gets you up in the middle of the night and it gets you working. It gets you, you know, to put on your running shoes in the middle of a rainstorm and go running anyway, because you don't want to, like, you know, it's overcoming that voice in our head that says, you can write tomorrow, or you could take a break, or la, la, la. It's just like, you know, it's that voice that goes, no, I'm going to do it. So, I mean, we could go on and we can have a whole thing on execution, you know, of getting things done. But like, there's really, I've come to find that there's really two people in this world. There's people that talk about doing stuff, and then there's people that do stuff. Fortunately, I get this from my father, I believe. My father was a doer. He made stuff happen. When the ship was sinking, he found a way to like save the ship. He was always positive, always moving forward, always learning from mistakes. Come on. And as a kid, he was always doing that. Learn from your mistakes. Keep on going. Let's go. Come on, son. You know, don't be down. Come on. Let's do it. You can do it. I mean, that was my dad constantly. So I'm blessed and I have that. And but some people don't. You know, being an instructor, a professor, I notice, wow, there's reasons why some people succeed and reasons why some people don't.
But,
you know,
I think about this way too much, obviously, and I don't want people to look at themselves in the mirror and go, I just don't have it. I'm just not that kind of person.
Yeah.
And
right.
Use that as their excuse.
Nope.
Because you could be, there's a famous comic, not a comic like a funny person, but a comic strip that I've seen used on our taxi forum. And it's a guy, it's one frame on top of another frame. The top frame is a guy with a pickaxe in a mine trying to find the diamonds or the gold. And he's this far away from breaking through the wall. And it shows him walking away with the pickaxe over his shoulder, but a side cut view shows that he was like a foot away from becoming
right.
fabulously wealthy. So,
right.
How does somebody know? First, they have to test themselves and give it that effort and find whatever's inside of them and not just use, I don't have it, I'm not a good enough songwriter, or I can't talk to people. I mean, I'm inherently shy. I go to a party, I am the guy that stands in the corner of the room and talks to my wife or my best friend and probably doesn't even go up to the bar to get a drink because I'm just not good at chit-chat. I found that I am good in front of a camera talking to people because they're my people and I'm connected at the heart with my customers. I'm
sure.
connected at the heart with you because we read the same kind of books and we're passionate about many of the same things. But how can somebody come out of their cocoon and unfold their butterfly wings? Boy, you can tell I've lived in California for 35 years. And discover that part of themselves that enables them to do face-to-faces, that enables them to become a personality online, rather than walking
sure.
away just by determining, I ain't got it.
Yeah, well, definitely you have a number of things that we can discuss within that, but just generally to kind of pick up on the very last thing you said was, you know, how do you just walk away from, I don't got it? Well, there's there's two things going on here. Is it your mind telling you that you don't have it, or do you truly not have it? So there's a difference. So if you, there's a great slogan. It's not Einstein that said it, even though people credit him. It's the definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. So you have the people that are so convinced that they're geniuses, but they actually aren't. And that is dangerous, obviously, because then you can just keep on doing the same things over and over, like, you know, expecting different results. And that's not good either. And then you have the other extreme of that, where you have people that don't realize their strengths are, and there's something in their mind that says you're not good enough, you're not worthy enough, and stuff like that. So there's two distinctions, obviously. So the first example would be, you have to be wise enough to recognize, like, you know, am I really good at this? Like, do I really have what it takes? And that's by surrounding yourself by experts. It's maybe working with coaches and consultants, you know, to maybe kind of try to figure out, you know, maybe this isn't working for a reason. Maybe you have other attributes or strengths you should be trying to focus on, and maybe you'll get different results. And then the other person really could just be asking themselves, have I really made an effort here to do this? How, you know, have I really given it my all? Is it my mind telling me that I'm not good at something? You know, for example, a lot of us can get caught up into this thought about, like, I'm not good at math. Let's just say, for example, right? Because in sixth grade, you have math Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And all you need to do is be sick 1 week, and you come back and you're already way behind, and you don't want to raise your hand because you don't want your peers to think you're stupid. So you say nothing and you sit there going, oh my God, I'm an idiot. And because in high school, they need to keep their records high. So instead of failing you, they give you a D. So you pass the freaking class, but you don't know anything. So now you go through life thinking that you're a stupid sort of, you know, stupid at math. And it's in your mind, I'm stupid at math. And then therefore you have these limited beliefs, right? And you don't do anything about it, right? But then you've gotta, and this is me we're talking about here, you guys, right? Then it's your brain all of a sudden says, this is BS. I never really gave a concerted effort at doing this. I'm gonna go for it. So I go out, I get tutors, I get coaches, I put my nose into the books. And then all of a sudden I'm like, holy crap, I am like acing, you know, algebra 2, pre-calculus, calculus, and then boom, I start taking the SATs, I mean, not the SATs, the LSATs and the you know, and all these tests to get back into grad school and stuff like that. I'm like, holy crap, I'm actually smart. Like, you know, it's just like, I put into my mind that it was not good. So that's the two things I'd like us to kind of think about. You have limited beliefs on one end, which is really the majority. And then, of course, you have the other people that, like, are in this false sense of reality that think they're great at something maybe where they might not be. So you have to, on one end, again, to repeat, kind of understand what really your strengths are, maybe by using coaches and stuff and going, look, there's a reason why maybe things aren't working. You have to maybe try another direction, or you have to, like, maybe have someone make up for your strengths. And then on this side, you have to, like, say, do I have limited beliefs about myself, and what am I going to do to change them? And then you might find that the things that you, like, actually execute, you now actually start to succeed much, much greater. You have such a higher level of success for these two reasons. Anyway, we could go on and on and on about execution. And then finally, the last one is learning more. Marketing doesn't change. Like, the structure that I'm talking about has been in place for years and decades. This is, you guys, right here. When you see these big seminars and stuff where they're going to teach you, I mean, to be quite honest with you, Michael, this was the Tony Robbins seminar, pretty much. I mean, not like exactly in this outline, but this is all they talked about. They didn't talk about anything other than what I just talked about, except the guy's Tony Robbins. He's been doing it 45 years and he can charge thousands of dollars and thousands of people come. But all of those seminars are pretty much structured on these, like, things. So it's not rocket science. You guys just got a lot that you can work with. These things don't change. Now, what does change? The TikTok algorithm, the YouTube algorithm, the Facebook algorithm. You got to pay attention to that kind of stuff. You know, little different things that come in and out of fads. But generally speaking, you guys really need to know this structure. and pay attention. Pay attention to what Michael said. When you're driving down the street, pay attention to the radio stations and what advertisements they're playing on the radio stations and why, right? Pay attention to the billboard that you see in Beverly Hills, let's just say. I know you guys aren't, everyone's not in Beverly Hills, but why is there a billboard in Beverly Hills here? But in Hollywood, there's a different billboard, right? Because it's appealing to different demographic audiences. Pay attention to that stuff. Pay attention to sales promotion. Marketing is all around us. So always be analyzing it and pay attention to that stuff because, you know, it exists, you know, all around, and you can learn so much by paying attention. So that is the complete marketing process.
Wow, I can't believe you got through all that. And it leads me to an apropos question, which is, it's a lot. It's people, we live in a world of instant results. We Google everything and we find out instantly what's tomorrow's weather, when's the next football game for this team, recipe for meatloaf, whatever. None of this stuff is going to happen overnight. And you kept going back to execution. So many musicians I know have expressed to me over many, many years, I don't have time for that stuff because I need to concentrate on my creative stuff. I need a manager, which is also an area of great expertise for you, an amazing level of expertise. I just want a manager. Really what they want is somebody to do all that other stuff for them so that they don't have to do it. And fair enough, I understand that, but you would still, your manager still needs you to show up and figure out, who does your music appeal to? Who's, you know, what's your demographic of your audience? What's your brand? They're not just going to come up with that stuff in a vacuum. They need to work with you on it. So what can you tell us that will motivate people to find the time, make the time, and understand that the music business has two words in it, music and business? The days of writing three great songs, having an A&R person say, man, I can make a star out of you, Bobby Borg. Come on over to the office on Monday, meet my boss. We're going to sign a contract and make you a rock star. Nowadays, DIY musicians especially, which is who your book is being marketed to, they need to be both those things. How do they find the time?
Well, there's a lot of time management sort of, you know, strategies that you can think about for sure. I mean, one of them would be, you know, to create sort of a grid, you know, where you have all the days going down and, you know, as columns, and then the time going across as rows, and where the days and the time meet is what's called a cell. And then in the cells, you just put what's called your, you know, your fixed responsibilities. So that might be going to work, you know, coming home, having dinner, you know, having lunch, you know, all that kind of stuff. You put those things in, and then what you do is you program or schedule all of the things around it that are variable. They're changeable, but you still want to actually schedule those things. And then you'll see that you probably have more time. In other words, people, like, literally you could schedule every minute of your day, but a lot of people, what they do is they just, you know, come home, like put the, you know, have the dinner, sit on the chair. Okay, maybe I should go down in the cellar and like start like writing. But like, if you know, boom, I just finished work. Okay, boom, go to the gym. Don't even think about it. Just do it. Come home, eat dinner. Boom. You know that right away you're supposed to go down in your cellar and start writing. The phone rings, you don't answer it. The internet has some goofy, you know, thing on there about, you know, you don't get distracted. You know, friend calls, let's go to happy hour. No, you know, because you scheduled happy hour on Saturday nights, you know, so schedule fun in too. But everything, you should be on a mission, like a missile that knows exactly where it's going. And that way you won't get distracted. So just simple time management, you know, just wanting to do it so bad that you're actually going to program everything into your life. And then just make sure to do it.
And if it, you know, does come from in here, you will find it's almost like that thing that Iron Man wears in his chest. Yeah, I don't know. I look back now and don't know how I found the strength to get Taxi off the ground. I literally worked 16 to 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for the first 2.5 to 3 years before I was able to earn $30,000 a year from this company. First 2 years, no income. I don't know how I did it, but I had that Iron Man thing in my chest and I didn't give up. And I wish that I could find a way to take it out of my chest and give it to every musician, because I know what it feels like to succeed at what you love and what you're passionate about. Everybody should feel like that. At least everybody, I want everybody. That's why I do Taxi TV. I make about $100 a month from YouTube from doing Taxi TV. The amount of work that goes into these episodes, unless you're my guest because you're so good, I don't have to do much. But the amount of work I do on Taxi TV, I must make about 4 cents an hour at the end of the year. I don't do it for the money. No, I do it because if I can bring education to our members and help them become better, then they'll be successful using the service, and the whole thing comes full circle.
People are a lot of times interested more in the results than the journey. Yeah. So in other words, do people really want to be successful? Do people really want to be musicians, or they just want a lime green Lamborghini? You know what I mean? And that's the problem, unfortunately, is that a lot of people just want the lime green Lamborghini. So, I mean, who the hell in their right mind would go, hey, Mike, I've got this perfect business idea for you. You're going to live in a small apartment, eat top ramen, and work for 15 years before you make 30 grand. You'll be like, you know, screw that, you right. know? So people are focused on the wrong things. I think that's one of the biggest problems. You know, I mean, even the first book I wrote, 5 years, like no one paid me a dime. No one believed it. No one helped me. So who would sit down writing for 5 years? I mean, with not even knowing it was going to go anywhere, because I had to do it. As a little kid, when I was 4 years old, I literally practiced 5 hours a day, 6 hours a day. It got to the point where I was practicing 15 hours a day, sacrificing everything, relationships, friends, all that social status, all that stuff, just to play in a cellar over and over and over again. Who would have ever known it was even going to go anywhere? But that's what it took to actually give me an opportunity to make some records and travel around and stuff like that and have some good times and make some money. Anything I've ever done required sick amounts of concentration and focus with what's called delayed gratification. Unfortunately, everyone today wants immediate gratification. So,
yeah, it's definitely a social ill, but those people who rise above it are the ones that are successful. Maybe you and I should collab on a book, why these musicians are so successful in sync. And, yeah, I mean, and interview the 20 most successful Taxi members, because I'm here to tell you, I know these people well, and they all have many things in common. First of all, they all go to the Road Rally. They all watch Taxi TV. They've all participated in the Taxi Forum, and they all set a schedule. Brandon Purcell comes instantly to mind. The guy got up at 4:30 in the morning, gets up 4:30 in the morning, goes down to the basement, and gets 2.5 to 3 hours worth of work done before his family gets out of bed and comes downstairs for breakfast every day. That takes a lot of something to get up at 4:30 in the morning. And now he works for one of the most successful trailer publishing companies in the world as a staff writer for them. And Taxi was his launching pad to get there. But he got up at 4:30 in the morning. He probably would have succeeded. I think we gave him the framework, but he had that Iron Man thing in his chest. And very, very proud of him. So, yeah, we should talk about that.
I'll tell you this. Yeah. If you're really serious about that while you're on your vacation, think about it, because my publisher loves me, and anything I pitch to them, they'll do. So if you really wanted to do that, I could probably say that it would be a published book about a year and a half from now if you really wanted to do it. So talk to me about the stories.
I know the people. I know the stories. And frankly,
you have all the connections and stuff. Yeah.
And I've interviewed them all. And I think that everybody should hear those stories, because they will see that 95% of the things that made those successful Taxi members successful is common to all of them.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we said earlier on. We said, the keys to success are really not that difficult, but it's the power to execute them, you know, the willingness to execute them. Like, will you do these things, you know? So some people feel they're running out of time. Someone might be a little bit older and say, like, I don't want to wait 10 years to get film placements. I want them now. But you got to be, because a lot of your people that are watching this right now are successful doctors and lawyers and accountants and, you know, and people that are in industries that have had successful careers. Well, how did you guys become successful doing those things? It wasn't like overnight. You didn't snap your fingers.
There's a difference. Creative people are born with this belief that I'm talented, and they think that they're just pop out of their mommy's belly with this talent living in them, just waiting to come out. And there may be a little bit of talent, but it's persistence, patience, it's education, it's learned habits, it's all that stuff. You don't just sit down and make a piece of music and everybody goes, wow. Even the Beatles didn't do that.
Exactly. They played for hours and hours and hours and weeks and weeks and weeks in the clubs to develop their sound and style. Absolutely.
Well, this has been great. I cannot recommend this book enough, you guys. Obviously, look, Bobby became a friend because I have so much respect for him because of the hard work he's done and the levels that he will dig deep to find the right information and present it in a very digestible way. This book is a great example of that. So I recommend that you buy it. And Bobby, thanks again for coming back twice in a week to do these so that I would have them in the can and know that I could be out of the country and have great stuff being disseminated. Yeah, so thank you very much.
Yeah,
and
my pleasure.
Definitely.
And if you guys don't mind, after you check out Taxi TV, right? And most of you guys are subscribed, but share it with a friend. Share the link of this video to your friends so that they can actually come over to the Taxi TV and subscribe. And then after you guys subscribe that, pop over to my channel, Bobby Borg, youtube.com/Bobby Borg, because I have like an education channel as well. It's different.